Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, James Comey fired, Sally Yates testifies, town halls on fire, and France elects a centrist. After other explanations, President Trump told NBC's Lester Holt this was why he fired FBI Director James Comey.
He's a showboat. He's a grandstander. The FBI has been in turmoil. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that.
Senator Chuck Schumer questioned the timing of Comey's dismissal.
We know the FBI has been looking into whether the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians. Were these investigations getting too close to home for the president?
And former acting attorney general Sally Yates testified on Capitol Hill that she warned the White House Michael Flynn was vulnerable to blackmail.
To state the obvious, you don't want your national security advisor compromised with the Russians.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Eliana Johnson of Politico, Aaron Blake of The Washington Post, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's your take on the real reason President Trump fired James Comey? Because he was doing a bad job? Because he was too deep into a Russia investigation? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook. We're reading at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Eliana Johnson, national political reporter for Politico. Eliana, great to have you with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Also with us from Washington, Aaron Blake, senior political reporter at The Washington Post. Aaron, terrific to have you back.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Eliana, and Aaron.
It is hard to know where to begin, but let's start right here. This is President Trump talking with NBC News' Lester Holt yesterday, contradicting just about everything that had been said earlier in the week about the firing of James Comey. Here you go.
I was going to fire Comey. My decision. It was not.
You had made the decision before they came in the room.
I was going to fire Comey. There's no good time to do it, by the way.
Because in your letter you said I accepted their recommendation.
Yeah, well,
so you
also
had already made the decision.
I was going to fire regardless.
His letter, the White House, Sean Spicer, on down, is like soup to nuts, a different explanation. And then the president sits down with Lester Holt and says, I was going to do it. Eliana Johnson, what has happened to the White House story on the firing of James Comey over the course of this week?
Well, we've heard a couple of different versions. The first, of course, we had the president's most loyal defenders in the form of his press operation, Sean Spicer and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, his press aides, and even more significantly, Vice President Mike Pence, who came out and said the president's hand was essentially forced because he received memos from his attorney general and deputy attorney general that said that FBI Director Jim Comey was not up to the job, and the president took their advice and fired him. And I think the most significant dynamic here is that the president, in undermining his administration officials, has made it essentially impossible for his staff and his cabinet to help him manage this crisis. It follows a familiar pattern, really, in which the president thinks his press operation is flat-footed. We didn't see a response from the White House in the first couple of hours in this. They were dark, while Chuck Schumer and the Democrats came out with an aggressive responses. The president got frustrated and took the reins of this himself. We've seen him do this many times in the past. But in doing so, he really exacerbated the crisis by undermining what his own team was saying. And it's a toxic dynamic in which he amplifies the crisis by undermining the credibility of his of the White House team.
And Aaron Blake, now today, this very morning, we have the threat out of the White House that maybe press briefings themselves will be ended, will be canceled. Aaron, what is the crisis here? How would you define it? I mean, the Washington's on fire right now. What's the crisis?
Well, I think it's a crisis any time you listen to what is coming out of the White House and the version of events they're giving you, and then they just as quickly a day later completely contradict that. You can think that the president firing James Comey was the right call, and according to a new poll, 38% of Americans do think that was the right call. That's the president's base is pretty much intact on this one. But aside from that, you have to get your reasoning down. If you don't give a consistent reason for why this decision was made, and as Eliana said, they certainly haven't done that, that just leads to all kinds of suspicions. It makes it look like, one, they don't have their house in order, and two, perhaps something was trying to be covered up in the first place. I think, just to close this out here, the reason that they stressed early on that this was a DOJ decision was because they were worried that the storyline was going to be that President Trump fired James Comey because James Comey was investigating him. They wanted this to look like it was somebody else's decision that he signed off on, and that made a lot of sense at the time. The president just totally obliterated that whole explanation. He even seemed to acknowledge that Russia was on his mind when he made it. And so then you get into the questions of whether this is an obstruction of justice or something amounting to that.
Russia, apparently, according to the president himself with Lester Holt, right in the middle of his reason for this. Here he was.
When I decided to just do it, I said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story. It's an excuse by the Democrats for having lost an election that they should have won.
And this, the president said FBI, James Comey told him, he put this in his letter earlier, but he said again to Lester Holt that he'd asked him about whether he was under investigation. Here's the president.
I actually asked him, yes. I said, if it's possible, would you let me know, am I under investigation? He said, you are not under investigation.
Well, who knows? Who knows what to believe here? Things going 360 in a hurry. Jack Beatty, what do you see going on here? And if there's a crisis, how would you define it, Jack?
Well, I think the crisis was defined pretty well by the first article of impeachment issued by the Watergate, by the House Judiciary Committee in the fall of summer of 1974. The first article spoke of, quote, against Mr. Nixon, a course of conduct designed to obstruct investigation of the Watergate cover-up, a course of conduct designed to obstruct an investigation. That wording seems to me to cover what went on in that dinner meeting where, according to the New York Times, to the dinner meeting with with Mr. Comey, according to the New York Times today, the president asked him for loyalty. To be loyal, asked the FBI director to essentially protect him.
Comey said, I'll give you honesty.
I'll give
but
you
he
honesty.
Demurred on loyalty, and that wasn't enough.
That wasn't enough for Mr. Trump. It a course of conduct designed to obstruct, that seems to fit the firing, clearly. And a course of conduct designed to obstruct, that clearly fits this tweet today that Mr. Trump basically has said, you better not talk, better not leak to the press, Mr. Comey. I have tapes. There may be tapes of this
I can quote the tweet. He said, James Comey better hope there are no, quote, tapes,
yeah,
unquote, of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press. Eliana, what do you see the president threatening there? What do you see?
I think it's pretty clear that the president is trying to intimidate the now former FBI director into silence with regard to all of this. And we've seen in the past when the president takes the reins of his communication strategy and essentially supplants the White House press secretary in spirit, if not in body, behind the podium, he exacerbates the problems in his administration. He managed to survive on the campaign, but it's a completely different thing when he's governing. And I think that's what we're seeing play out here. One thing chronicled in our reporting of this at Politico,
yes,
is that he's disincentivized his defenders from going out to defend him. We saw him contradict his vice president, but defenders outside the White House as well, people like Rudy Giuliani and Newt Gingrich, people who you normally see going out to defend the president,
They don't want to do that. How? How? Why?
He's disincentivized them because they feel that they could be contradicted at any moment by the president. They saw him do it to the vice president from one day to the next in his interview with NBC's Lester Holt. And people are nervous that they go out and defend the president. They hear one thing from the White House one day and another thing the next. And so he's discouraged people from trying to help him and defend him.
Can't potentially even have press briefings now because even those right there in the White House with him don't quite know what to say, apparently, when they come out, because the president may say something very different. The word was this was all about a loss of confidence in the Department of Justice and in the FBI. And then we saw the acting FBI director, who stepped in, Andrew McCabe, before the Senate Intelligence Committee yesterday. Well, was it right that there was disillusionment within the FBI? Here was his response. With James Comey, here's what McCabe had to say.
Director Comey enjoyed broad support within the FBI and still does to this day.
Boom. That argument apparently gone right there, though the White House has tried to have it otherwise. Aaron, where is this rolling? You've got people out there saying what the president's saying. This is much ado about nothing. And you've got others saying, pulling out impeachment clauses here.
Well, to the point that you just played in the clip there, the White House Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders has said in briefings the last couple of days that there are countless people within the FBI who have told her that they were unhappy with Comey's conduct, with his performance on the job. McCabe directly contradicted that. The president was supposed to visit the FBI this week and canceled that visit in light of apparent resistance to him showing up after he'd fired somebody.
The director.
Right. So this I don't know how Sarah Huckabee Sanders would have those kinds of sources, those many people telling her that in private, that there was this reluctance to support Comey. The FBI is very insular. The people there are trained not to leak, including to the administration. So I think that really strains credulity that there were people actually telling her this. And it really feeds the narrative of the White House seeking out and finding justifications for this firing, which, by the way, Trump just kind of rendered moot with his interview with NBC News.
President Trump, Senate Minority Leader Whip Dick Durbin now saying, President Trump has become a danger to the country, destroying his own credibility in front of the nation and the world. Mitch McConnell defending him, others defending him. We'll look at that. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking about a week in the news, the firing of James Comey, uproar over the reasons. Sally Yates speaks. Town hall's on fire this week. France says no to Le Pen. Aaron Blake is with us, senior political reporter for The Washington Post. Eliana Johnson is here, national political reporter for Politico. Jack Beatty's here. You can join us as well. What do you see in this Comey story, in the president's response, his tweets, his statements that it was not for the reasons that the White House and practically everybody else has stated in his orbit earlier in the week, that it was his decision, and then talking immediately about Russia. The president's tweets today threatening James Comey, saying, better hope there are no tapes of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press. Does that mean talking to the press? He's no longer director of the FBI, trying to shut down James Comey talking to the press. You can join us this hour. What do you make of the Comey story, of the White House and the changing story? And earlier, what were you thinking as Sally Yates described Michael Flynn as vulnerable to blackmail this week? What about those town halls? Were you at one of them? Where will this go? Well, suspicions. Here's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. Only way forward? Special prosecutor.
Are people going to suspect cover-up? Absolutely. If an independent special prosecutor is appointed, there still can be some faith that we can get to the bottom of this. If not, everyone will suspect cover-up.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, no way, not needed.
Today we'll no doubt hear calls for a new investigation, which could only serve to impede the current work being done to not only discover what the Russians may have done, also to let this body and the national security community develop countermeasures and warfighting doctrine to see that it doesn't occur again.
Don't dig into this with a special prosecutor because we need to develop warfighting, digital warfighting countermeasures. They're the majority leader, Aaron, Eliana, Jack Stemmett. Lots of callers here. Montanez in Nashville. Montanez, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I'm extremely frustrated by this orchestration being laid out to the American people by this White House. Well, we're 116 days in, and we've got the press secretary hiding behind bushes in order to keep up this authoritative press misinformation and to keep everything in-house. On top of that, we don't have anybody in the Senate, nor in the House, nor in Congress willing to stand up for what we have built this country on. We have them willing to take the stance that we're going to continue to back this president because he is a Republican or standing on Republican principles, yet he's ransoming our rights and our liberties, and nobody wants to stand up to this guy. This is such an atrocity. Nothing like this has ever happened in my lifetime. I'm 44 years old. I don't care if you're a Democrat, whether you're a Republican. If it's not America first, where we're taking care of ours and we're willing to make underhand deals with other countries, that's
Montanez, we hear it. You lay it out very plainly, and I'm very grateful for your call. I mean, I want to put to the panel the FBI director acting this week saying, hey, yes, we have an investigation. There's no effort been made to impede it. It's going to go on. Let's first test on that front. Here he was, Andrew McCabe.
There has been no effort to impede our investigation to date. Quite simply put, sir, you cannot stop the men and women of the FBI from doing the right thing, protecting the American people and upholding the Constitution.
Aaron Blake, speak to that. Can Americans sit back and think, well, okay, James Comey was fired and somebody new will be put in there. He'll be put up ultimately by Donald Trump, but this investigation will go forward unimpeded. Nothing to worry about here. Is that fair, Aaron? Is that a reasonable view or not? Montanez is pretty freaked.
Well, 2 points to that. I think that one point is that the FBI is stocked with career people there, non-political appointees, or people who came up as career people and who were later appointed by a president. So there are plenty of people there who can get this done, who can conduct the investigation in a very strong manner and press forward on it. I don't think, you know, James Comey was involved in the day-to-day
but he was head of it. He gave it cover. He was out, we're told, asking for more resources for it. I mean, even if it goes ahead, is there a chilling effect when you see the head cut off of the FBI and Trump cites Russia? Is there a procedural chilling? Because in the end, they can investigate, but, you know, who brings charges here? Who follows through? That goes to the AG.
That's the second part of what I was talking about is that chilling effect. I don't know that President Trump, if this was intended to affect the investigation, was actually concerned about James Comey specifically so much as trying to send a message that he wouldn't be, needed somebody who was going to be more loyal to him, wanted somebody who was going to be, you know, and sending a message, by the way, to the rest of the people involved in this investigation that he expects them to be loyal to him in some way. I don't think that message is necessarily going to be received by those rank and file career people at the Justice Department and the FBI, but that certainly seems to be the intended effect, if that is what he was going for.
Eliana, you've been writing about Jeff Sessions as Donald Trump's now most valuable ally. He, of course, recused himself from the Russia investigation because of his own meeting with on the Russia front. But now he's the guy through whom any charges would come. How do you see Sessions' role here, Eliana?
He made himself, he recused himself legally from any investigation relating to the 2016 election. But this week he made himself very politically useful to the president. The president used him as a political shield, though that
used him and then dropped him.
Exactly.
He said,
I was going to say, though, that didn't last for very long. I think it's important to note that this investigation, it will go on. I don't, as Aaron said, I don't think that if Trump intended to send a message about this investigation continuing, that the message was received. Certainly, the investigation has been a thorn in the president's side because he sees it as undermining the legitimacy of his victory. Sessions, isn't playing a role in this investigation, and I don't think will have any effect on the FBI's march forward in terms of investigating any collusion between Trump campaign aides and Russia.
Ron in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Ron, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So much has been said that I was going to bring up that all I will say is to the GOP, how far are you going to follow Donald Trump? I've got Paul Ryan running around the state today and yesterday and the whole time defending Donald Trump. And as it keeps going, I cannot wait until the midterms. And I guess I'm wondering how long before the Trump supporters start falling off and asking themselves, is it all fake news? Is it really fake news when he is out there lying on TV and all his surrogates are all lying? I mean, they have to really look in the mirror. So,
I mean, clearly the stories are not straight here, and we've got that, Ron. We've got that loud and clear. Let me get one more. Elaine in Madison, Wisconsin. Elaine, you're on the air. Thank you very much for calling.
Well, if I would have been President Trump, I would have fired James Comey after the disaster with Hillary. I mean, President Clinton met that, what's her name, on the tarmac and went on her plane.
Loretta Lynch, you would have fired him after he didn't, go after Hillary Clinton last summer?
Yeah.
But, of course, Donald Trump wasn't president then.
He closed the investigation, and then he reopens it, okay? And he totally made an ass of himself, as far as I'm concerned.
Are you a Trump supporter? Are you feeling disillusioned, or are you solid, Elaine?
And I have another point to make as well. I think maybe what he told Comey was, like, if you contradict what you actually said to me, I may have a tape of what you really said. So if you lie, you know, I have a tape here that says what you actually told me.
I mean, right there, Elaine, I think you're on. That seems to be the gist of President Trump's tweet today. Though, if somebody's lying here, I don't know who it would be. And certainly the president's own credibility now in some deep shadow after, you know, the sort of back and forth that we've seen. But I've got it. Jack, what are you thinking here as we wade into this?
Well, you know, Mondin has raised the issue of the relative Republican silence. As of yesterday, according to one count, 138 Democrats, but only 6 Republicans, had called for a special counsel. So there's a kind of numerical proof of the relative silence. And then Ron raised the issue of the 2018 election. Impeachment is going to be on the ballot in 2018, whether explicitly or implicitly. Democratic voters are going to demand that the candidates for the House, because the Senate probably won't change, but the candidates for the House, all office, commit themselves at a minimum to, will you hold hearings on the impeachment of the president for potential obstruction of justice, for potential collusion with Russia, or will you not? It'll be the most historic midterm election probably ever.
Let's go to Bill in Centerville, Maryland. Bill, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. My comment is that the working people in this country have a contract with their employer. I work for you and do what you tell me, and you pay me in exchange.
Where are you going with this, Bill? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I'm a working class citizen. I'm a middle class citizen.
Great.
I've worked for a living my whole life.
So what do you see here?
And the contract I've always had with my boss was, I pay you and you do what I tell you to do. And if you don't like it, I'll fire you. We all working class work with that system in this country. It's legal.
What are you saying about President Trump, Bill? Are you saying he was right to fire James Comey?
I say he doesn't need a reason. He does not need a reason.
What about the fact, Bill, that the FBI is investigating the president, and the president turns around and fires the guy who's leading the organization investigating his campaign?
He works at the pleasure of the president, and the president can fire anybody he wants to. Just like if I work for, say, Southern States. They don't need a reason to fire me. They just give me a slip and say bye.
Yeah, I mean,
that's how the system works.
Bill, we've got it, but, I mean, but you know, this is a little bit more complicated than in a boss-employee relationship. He has the authority, but we're citizens, and we have an interest in this as well, and there are 3 branches to this government. You've got Republicans, some of them worried about this. We heard
Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse today. By the way, he'll be on the show on Monday. And talking with NPR this morning and saying that there is an erosion of public trust. This is a Republican Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska. He worried about future Russian intervention in U.S. Elections, said he does not support opening an independent investigation. We'll look at that. But that it would be a vote of no confidence, he said, in the ongoing Senate investigation. But he listen to this, Bill. Here's a Republican Senator Sasse questioning Donald Trump's performance as a leader, the sort of civic responsibility test.
I don't think there's an organized decision-making process in the White House about policymaking issues. And one of the president's responsibilities is to try to pass on an understanding of what America's about well before policy and partisan differences. Who are we as a people and what do we want to build for the kids? I don't think the president takes seriously that civic responsibility that all of us in public life have.
Jack, that's a pretty profound and basic cutting critique of this president from Republican Ben Sasse.
Yes, and it really goes to Mr. Trump's insouciance about American exceptionalism. I mean, remember that interview of some months ago where he was asked, where I think it was Bill O'Reilly said, the Russians have killed people, Putin has killed people, they've done all, and Trump said, well, what do you think, we're Simon Pure, we've killed people too. Again and again, he has shown a kind of alienation from the American story, certainly from the high notes in that story. Witness his maundering about the Civil War. Well, we could have worked that out, couldn't we? There's a kind of callousness and ignorance and indifference to the strain of values in American public life that is part of our sort of civic religion, the belief that somehow we are a special country, not that we can lord it over others, but that we have a proper pride.
Well, but honesty, straightforwardness, you don't have to be too special to aspire to those, Jack.
No, not at all. Not at all. And there the president has signally failed. I mean, the tally of his lies, I think something like four or five a week documented. I think Senator Sasse says something very important there.
Eliana, what are the real prospects or possibility of a special prosecutor here? That has to go through the Attorney General's office. Does it not? Is that ever going to happen?
Right now, I think the answer is we don't know. And if I could go back to the callers for just a moment. We had one caller saying, who will stand up to Trump? Will anybody stand up to Trump? And another caller raising a related question, how far will Republicans go along with this president? I think it's important to note that the Democrats are essentially this president is galvanizing them. They're essentially an anti-Trump party right now. So we're not lacking for people who to stand up to this president. And I think the Republicans, on the other hand, they're not exactly cheering this move. They may not be calling for a special prosecutor, but we're hearing a lot of Republicans raise questions about both the manner in which Comey was dismissed and the timing of the move. I think Republicans and Democrats alike, aren't exactly sad to see Comey go. Both parties had raised questions about him. But I think it's significant that Republicans are not they're not defending the way the president did this or the timing of the move. And I think that's significant to the matter of a special prosecutor. I think because of the way the president did this, it's clear he made a hasty decision. He received memos from the attorney general's office one day and moments later did this without informing Comey in person. He increased the likelihood of the appointment of a special prosecutor, and in that very way exacerbated the Russia investigation, the length of it, the severity of it, and so on, just as he was trying to stop it by dismissing the FBI director.
Aaron, do you see daylight through which a special prosecutor might come to be, or is that just you got Mitch McConnell there, you've got Jeff Sessions there? Who's going to make that happen?
Well, there's slightly more daylight now. I still think Republicans are going to resist this at all costs. Once they go down this road, they have effectively said, one, that their own investigations are not sufficient, yeah, that the Republican-led investigations in Congress aren't going to get the job done, which isn't a fun thing to do. They're also going to effectively be, in a way, declaring war on their own president. They're going to be lending credence to the idea that this is a very serious set of circumstances. That's going to hurt his credibility. That's going to hurt their relationship with him. And a lot of these Republicans really see this as an opportunity. their majorities in Congress and President Trump being a Republican to get things done that they've wanted to do for a very long time.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, graduating students at historically black Bethune-Cookman University in Daytona Beach, Florida, vigorously booed Education Secretary Betsy DeVos as she gave a commencement address on Wednesday.
I am honored to become a Wildcat. And it's a real honor and privilege to be with you.
Wow, not happy. Not happy here either. Chaos erupted Sunday at Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport after Spirit Airlines canceled a whole bunch of flights. Delayed passenger Jennifer Glantz said she's done with the airline.
People getting arrested left to right. Nowhere to sit, nowhere to stand. It was just too crowded. They didn't put us on standby. It was just horrible.
Crazy scene there, screaming in the airport. And Stan Weston, creator of G.I. Joe, died at 84 this week. His military action figure became one of the most popular toys ever produced and was turned into a popular kids' TV show.
We'll fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there. G.I. Joe.
Real American hero. G.I. Joe is there.
Wow, G.I. Joe, there's something out of history. We're looking at a week in the news, the firing of James Comey, uproar over the reason Sally Yates speaks this week. Town Hall's just on fire. France, in its vote, saying yes to Macron, no to Le Pen. Aaron Blake is with us, senior political reporter for The Washington Post. Eliana Johnson, national political reporter for Politico. Jack Beatty is here. You can join us as well. What are you thinking on Comey, on the Yates testimony, on the town halls this week, and well beyond? John in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
A question. The Russians achieved a propaganda coup this week when the foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov. And the ambassador, Kislyak, showed up at the White House and were invited in for a private meeting the day after Mr. Comey was fired. We were invited for a private meeting with only TASS photographers and TASS journalists. All other journalists were kept out.
That is Russian press in, American press out. Yeah.
Pardon?
Russian press in and American press out. What do you think of it, John?
Well, I think it's a propaganda coup for Putin. I think the president's intentions are much more visible, and his intent to try to stop investigating him. I think he just stuck a thumb in everyone's eye and said, "I dare you."
Yeah, I want to look at that. We've got tape of Lavrov. He was meeting with President Trump at the White House on Wednesday. Yes, and through an interpreter here, told reporters at the Russian embassy afterward that the current president is less hostile to Russia than President Obama was because President Trump is more willing to cut deals.
The Trump administration, the president himself, and the Secretary of State are people of action, and they want to make deals. They aren't doing this to score ideological points, but to solve real problems.
Yeah, just here to solve real problems. Eliana Johnson, what do you make of the president of the United States greeting the Russian foreign minister at the White House, Russian press there, American press zero? What do you make of that?
At the very least, the optics of that, the day after the president dismissed the FBI director, and he said it was because of the Russia investigation, were disastrous for the White House. And it was not appropriate, I don't think, for the president to have foreign media, in the Oval Office while keeping out American media. But as a strict matter of optics, absolute disaster.
I mean, why put it in terms of optics? That means it looks bad. Isn't it just bad on the face of it? This country doesn't have its own press there. You've got only Russian press. We've got so much going on around the questions over this administration and Russia. You've got a Russian press disciplined in Russia by, I mean, journalists there get killed if they come out in opposition to Vladimir Putin. And they're the ones, I guess, schooled and trained who are let in and not American reporters.
Yeah, it was wrong. It was absolutely wrong. And I think you saw during the campaign, this was sort of a reversion to the way that that Trump and the Trump campaign treated reporters, where they picked and chose who they kept in and who they left out. They deviated from the norms of the way campaigns had interacted with the press. And they, they dropped that when they won and went into the administration. There were a lot of questions about whether they would behave as a normal White House, and they really have, for the most part, in terms of their interactions with the press. In fact, I think they've been more open and more friendly in their day-to-day interactions with the press than the previous administration. But this was a real reversion to, I think, what many people saw as the inappropriate behavior of the Trump campaign for, you know, a long time. Really unfortunate and sets a terrible precedent.
President Trump was it you, Aaron?
Yeah, and by the way, I'd add, Tom, that this is a part of a pattern, not just dating back to the campaign and his dealings with the U.S. press. It's also happened with foreign meetings so far this year, when Secretary of State Rex Tillerson went to visit the Kremlin. He left the U.S. press pool behind. We were basically left read about the account from the Kremlin. When President Trump talked to Chinese President Xi Jinping, the version of the call from the Chinese government was much, much more extensive than the one we got from the White House. And so the uptake of that is that we are left to basically depend upon the accounts of the press and the governments from countries that have a very poor record of press freedom and human rights. And but that's the only information that we're left to deal with from these phone calls and these meetings. And I think that's really troubling.
The president tweeting on this today as well, trying to put a positive light on it, I guess. He says, as a very active president, this is why he may cancel press briefings, he's threatening now. As a very active president with lots of things happening, it is not possible for my surrogates to stand at podium with perfect accuracy. Tweet one. Tweet two. Maybe the best thing to do would be to cancel all future press briefings and hand out written responses for the sake of accuracy. Hard to keep up with this president as he turns. Paul in Charlotte, North Carolina. Paul, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. And it seems not to be optics, it's narcissism. And I have a question. You guys would pivot to Moscow. And now, what do you believe Putin's next move? Here's a former KGB. If his goal was to interfere with, you know, the democracy of the United States and elevate Russia at the cost of U.S. in a global perspective, does he sit back and say, let's just let this play out, and we've done our job, thank you very much? Or does he say, you know what, let's do some leak. Let's get Wikipedia into this. What do you think his next steps would be?
I mean, we heard Republican Senator Ben Sasse today saying you can't count on further Russian interference in American elections right up to the last minute in any given race, putting out, you know, get in there and get people's credit card stuff and put out most of the truth, but salt it with lies and put it out. But, Jack, I mean, that's kind of small bore, though. I don't know how small. If you change elections, you change the path of a country. Putin, if he wanted to get the United States in a swivet, he certainly got that, Jack.
He certainly has. Ed Luce, the outstanding columnist for the Financial Times, made that point this week. He said that the Russian government has made little secret of its desire to contaminate our democracy. Then he goes on Tuesday, Putin chalked up another victory. The president did something typically associated with a non-democracy. He interfered with the course of justice. Not even Nixon fired the head of the FBI.
Jack in Hudson, Ohio. Jack, you're on the air.
Yes, I think that rather than projecting problems of the United States on the foreign media, you know, I was just looking up on a search, CIA Operation Mockingbird Media, Lies for Wars. And it shows that in the 70s, the Congressional and Senate Committee showed that the entire corporate media in this country, and I would include NPR, has been collaborated secretly with the CIA. And I think this whole witch hunt against Russia is really what's behind all this. The official religion for all my life, for a century, has been to hate and fear Russia. The military-industrial CIA complex that owns this media is out to squelch anyone who slightly deviates a heresy from that religion. Because
Jack, we've got it. I mean, I know the history you're talking about of tension between these two countries, of course. Your assertion that the media is owned in that way, Not me. Nobody tells me what to do. And I think you can extrapolate that right on across the U.S. media. But, I mean, here we are. We've got all the U.S. intelligence agencies saying that Russian fingerprints are on the leaks that came out last year around the campaign. I guess I'm not quite as sanguine about how all this works out. And we had Sally Yates this week. I mean, talking about how we had a national security advisor to the president of the United States vulnerable to blackmail because of meetings he had, but then lied about to the vice president. Here she was before the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee hearing on Monday.
It was clear from the vice president and others that they were repeating what General Flynn had told them and that this was a problem because not only did we believe that the Russians knew this, but that they likely had proof of this information. And that created a compromise situation, a situation where the national security advisor essentially could be blackmailed by the Russians.
Eliana Johnson, I mean, what Sally Yates said this week is essentially our understanding of her view, I think, from before the hearing. But it was said with such unvarnished clarity, it was quite arresting, Eliana.
Absolutely. She raised some real concerns. But I don't think it was anything we didn't know. Mm-hmm. The contrast to what she said and then the fact that Michael Flynn was kept on for 18 days after the Trump administration knew this and that the FBI director was dismissed summarily, I think raised concerns about what's happening inside the Trump White House. And the fact that Donald Trump has repeatedly come to the defense of Michael Flynn, it seemed that, to me at least, that he harbors some real longing that he resented having his hand forced. I don't think he wanted to fire Michael Flynn, and that he has a real longing actually to have him back in the White House on some visceral level.
That's not going to happen. We've been reading this week about tension with H.R. McMaster.
Exactly. Yeah, I think in the wake of these reports about the fact that he's butting heads with H.R. McMaster, of course, who wrote a PhD thesis about the importance of speaking truth to power, telling the president things he doesn't want to hear, has been doing that in his job. And I do think it made the president come to Flynn's defense and have a nostalgia in some way for the 20-something short days that Flynn spent on the job.
Aaron Blake, what do you make of the hot town halls we heard across the country this week? Congresspeople back in their districts and a bunch of Republicans in particular, just a wall of sound of fury against them. Is that a big deal, or are these just pockets of unhappiness?
I think it is a big deal, and it's not just because that there are these anecdotes. I'm always skeptical of the anecdotes you get from these town halls because it's a few people. A lot of times they don't speak for a whole large segment of the American public. But we had our first poll out of the American Healthcare Act on Thursday, and it showed that this law is hugely unpopular, that the passion is very much on the against side. I'll give you one number here. There's a ton of them in there. It had 46% of Americans were strongly opposed to the bill that the House passed last week. Only 9% were strongly in favor. So this is basically a bill that almost nobody loves and that there is a very strong amount of opposition to. That's troubling for Republicans when it comes to their 2018 hopes, certainly. And it's going to give them pause when it comes to passing anything similar through the Senate and then trying to negotiate the differences between those two bills.
Tracy in Boston. Tracy, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. Yeah. I enjoy talk radio because I don't watch the news anymore since the Trump administration has taken over, because I don't feel like I'm getting any information whatsoever. And largely because, you know, I'm a Democrat now and I used to be a Republican. I'm originally from Texas and was always a Republican until this Trump administration has taken over. So like he is creating scare tactics within the administration so that no one was going to speak up because they're in fear of getting fired or losing their job. And we always had this sentence of, oh, Senate has to vote. They have to vote. This has to go through before. Well, absolutely, that's not happening. The president is making a complete democracy of what he wants and is calling every single shot. And it's like no one has a voice, and it's not okay.
But, of course, that was the Republican complaint about Barack Obama when he used executive orders, Tracy.
And you know what? There's always going to be a complaining factor between both parties, always. Yep. But what's going on right now is, it's crazy. It really is, honestly and truly. And as a woman who's raising daughters, it makes me sick to my stomach to see some of the things that have gone on. And I don't even have any words for it. That's how distraught I feel on a daily basis, because I'm worried, very worried about our country and my family and just everything that's going on a daily basis. I'm very worried.
Tracy, I'm sorry to hear that, but I guess I have to say I understand. I appreciate your call. Jack, the French voted last weekend. No Le Pen. No super right wing there. They've got their centrist in power. Do you feel a pendulum swinging here, Jack, or are we in for more wild times?
Well, the center held for now. You can't ignore, though, the almost doubling of Le Pen's vote over her father's vote in the 2002 election. That's an ominous trend. You can't doubt the strong support she got from young people, an ominous trend. And when you look at that French economy with the chronic unemployment, 25% among young people, it takes practically a court action to fire an employee. And yet, on the other hand, the French desperately want more security in the economy. The
tough
path
equation.
Behind, tough equation for Mr. Macron.
Jack Beatty, thanks very much for being with us this week.
Thank you.
Aaron Blake, senior political reporter for The Washington Post. Thanks for joining us, Aaron.
Thank you.
And Eliana Johnson at Politico. Thank you very much, as always, Eliana.
Thank you.
Listeners, finally today on a personal note, medical news. Not bad, but it's going to take me off air for a little while. Next week, I'm headed in for a vascular surgery to fix a problem my 85-year-old dad has had and his mother before him as well. All in the family, not the heart. It's a repair doctors say I need. They say the fix is straightforward and very long-lasting. So I am stepping up to take care of it. I'll be out the rest of May, maybe a bit beyond, then right back here with you. Stay tuned to On Point. My terrific producers will be here working their magic for you every day. And before you know it, I'll be back in the saddle. Thanks for your patience and care. I will be back with you soon. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, Allison Poley, Tanya Rowley, James Ross, and Gretchen Voss. With help from Calvin Henry, Grace Seegers, and Michael DeSocio, our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. You can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. Talk to you again soon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.